Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Thank you for joining me today. Wow. There's like 1,000 different directions we could go today in terms of what do we want to talk about that's going on in the world that is bearing down not only on the headline news, but into the conversations of the day where we feel called and compelled as Christians to bring the mind of Christ to bear. So since you all were so responsive yesterday to my invitation to start using this newfangled way of communicating called text messaging. I know it's not actually new for anybody, but it's new for us here on Connecting Faith. So I'm going to encourage you to continue to communicate with me via the text line. You use the same number as the studio line. That's 877-933-2484. What's cool about it is you can text me thoughts and ideas, things that you would like to have addressed, conversations that you are challenged to find a way to enter into as a Christian, questions that, you know, gosh, you're just looking for somebody to ask, maybe. Conversations that are taking place around you, in your car, at your workplace, you know, in the bleachers, wherever, even at church. And you're saying to yourself, you know, it might be good to get some perspective on this, to see what sort of biblical principles we could bring to bear. Well, you can text me questions, show ideas, at 877-933-2484. Thank you to all of you who texted in yesterday and got us really rocking and rolling on this new way of communicating with each other. So thank you so much for that. So this week in Washington, D.C., you know, we use the word unprecedented. You hear the word unprecedented a lot in relationship, particularly to this political season that we're in. However, there actually is something unprecedented happening in Washington this week, and we are going to talk about it today with a guest coming up in the second segment of the program in about 15 minutes. And it is the International Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom. It's being hosted by Mike Pompeo, our Secretary of State, and it is it's an opportunity for folks to really focus in on advancing religious liberty around the world. It's also providing an opportunity for folks to discuss the value of religious liberty here in the United States. And so before we're joined by Brian Grimm, who's actually at the event and presenting, I thought maybe we'd just spend a few minutes talking about religious freedom and religious liberty here in our opening time together. Why? Because there are a lot of headlines every single day that are really about religion. They're really religious headlines. If you look for the religion storyline, if you look for the God beat in the story. And so I just want to be sure that we're kind of all on the same page in terms of what religious liberty is, because genuine religious freedom or religious liberty actually depends upon the foundational idea of pluralism. And sometimes we think of a pluralism as being a dirty word, when in fact, pluralism is the foundation upon which the idea of freedom of religion actually depends. And so if we define pluralism as a genuine freedom of conscience, then freedom of religion is established on that foundation. So the freedom to freely believe anything or the freedom to freely believe nothing is the basis of the conversation. And so the freedom of 40 million people in the first week following the release of a song called God is a Woman to worship at the altar of a young woman called Ariana Grande, which if you're not up to speed on this story, is one that we should certainly talk about in terms of things that younger folks in our culture are paying attention to. Now 50 million people have viewed the release of the God is a Woman video. It is it's pornography. And it's heretical. So it's got something for everybody. So we as Christians recognize that, wow, we live in the kind of context of religious freedom where 50 million now of our neighbors are free. They are free to worship at the altar of Ariana Grande. Likewise, the New York Times posted an op-ed this past Sunday, which you have to remember is the highest readership day of the week for them. And in that op-ed, the veracity of the Bible is completely undermined. We live in the context of pluralism supporting the freedom of parents in Massachusetts, featured in a Boston Globe article, who are raising their children as gender-free, allowing their children to choose, craft, or create, or adopt a gender along an ever-growing identity spectrum. Yes, in fact, people are free. They have the religious freedom to believe anything and therefore pursue judgments and decisions in their life that come out of those systems of belief or non-belief. And yes, you have the freedom to reject all of those ideas. Now, that gets us to what we tend to think of as religious freedom. We tend to think of religious freedom as the freedom of pastors to preach the word of God in and out of season, and the freedom of Christians to enter into even these kinds of cultural conversations of our day, declaring that God is God, the Bible is God's revealed word, Jesus is Lord over all the kingdoms of the earth, and that the kingdom of God is advancing here and now, whether people believe it or like it or not. So you and I have the freedom to not only believe, but fully exercise our religious convictions, because we actually live in a culture that protects the freedom of those who want to worship at the altar of Ariana Grande singing a song about God as a woman. And if she's not free to sing what she's singing, and those people aren't free to bow down and worship her, then likewise, you and I are not free to worship our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and proclaim him as the way and the truth and the life for not only for everyone, but for all time and all space and all matter. So people have been rejecting God and God's authority and God's son for a really long time. So what we're experiencing in this generation is not new. The fact that people adopt and advocate for ideas that are contrary to God's design or God's reign or even God's reality, that's not some new avant-garde theology. It's just plain old idolatry. It's what the Bible describes as the exchanging of the truth about God for lies and the worship of the creation in the place of the creator. So Ariana Grande would have you believe that she, specifically her female sexuality, is worthy of worship. And based on everything that we know from the Bible, Ariana Grande is wrong. But she's absolutely free to build an altar of self-worship and receive the adoration and economic offerings of others in support of her cult of personality. She's absolutely free, and others are free to support her in it. So while we can and should be critical of her ideas and call out the utter perversion of the beauty and goodness of God's gift of sexuality, we have to also acknowledge her right to believe and preach utter falsehood. Your very freedom to believe another person's beliefs are unbelievable is actually the foundation of religious freedom itself. So every time you read or hear about someone believing something that you find unbelievable, I want you to remind yourself that their freedom to believe what they believe and your freedom to believe otherwise is not only freedom of thought and freedom of conscience, it is the freedom of religion. That leads us to a conversation about what I will call viewpoint discrimination. Viewpoint discrimination from any direction is the very antithesis of this foundational freedom, not only of speech, but religion. And viewpoint discrimination is certainly on the rise in America. We're all aware of the rise of it on college campuses. Did you also know that in Indiana, there's a bus company that has just rejected an ad because it features photographs of the biological development of a human baby? They regard that now as political speech. Were you aware that in other places around the world, because of blasphemy laws, people who speak in contradiction to the established state religion have to actually flee for their lives? Did you know that some U.S. lawmakers want companies like Amazon to close their distribution platforms to those of us who advocate for ideas that are contrary to the prevailing progressive winds of our day? That is viewpoint discrimination, and it's viewpoint discrimination at an economic level, which you and I both know in America is the driver of a lot of our conversations. So, that brings us all to the meeting that's taking place in Washington, D.C. this week. It's the first ever ministerial to advance religious freedom. It starts today. The State Department is the host. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has called this. He's seeking to raise awareness about the challenges that people face around the world. But the very fact that the conversation is taking place here in the United States highlights the depth of commitment that we have as a people to the idea and the ideal of religious freedom. So indeed, a free people are only as free as the ideas they are free to freely express. I know there's a lot of free in that sentence, but it seemed important to say. So I'll say it again. A free people are only as free as the ideas they are free to freely express or reject. Chief among those ideas are religious beliefs, religious conviction, religious expression, not only in the context of what you might think of as a Sunday morning church service, but in every context, in every conversation, in every place under the sun, at every hour of the day and night. So you may not be inclined to howl at the moon or worship today's teen idol, but the right of others to do so stands actually as a guard against those who would deny you and I the right to declare the goodness, beauty, and truth of the God of all creation, the King of all glory, and the risen Son, Jesus the Christ. So when we talk about religious freedom, we have to talk about it in not only broad, but very personal categories, and in very broad and very personal ways. And so to continue the conversation about religious freedom, I'm going to be joined right after a short break. Next up, my conversation with Brian Grimm about what's going on in Washington, D.C. at the Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and I'll be right back. Hey friends, you're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. We are talking about what's going on in Washington, D.C. this week, the first ever Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom, hosted by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. One of the speakers at the event is Brian Grimm. Brian is the president of the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation. He's a leading expert on international religious demography and the socioeconomic impact of restrictions on religious freedom. You and I have heard of things like the World Economic Forum. Well, Brian recently served as the chair of the World Economic Forum's Global Agenda Council on the Role of Faith, and he was a speaker at the forum's 2018 annual meeting in Davos. So if you want to be listening to a guy who actually has the ear of people who make things happen, it's Brian Grimm. Hey, Brian, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Great to be with you, Carmen.
So we actually talked a couple of weeks ago here on the program about the whole concept of redeeming capitalism. And so I think that we have warmed our listeners up to the conversation that you and I are going to have today. What is the relationship between open markets, economic growth, and religious freedom?
Well, the relationship is very close. Where you have religious freedom, that means you have people in society who are set free to follow their deepest held beliefs. And people don't do that, just as you were saying before the break, only at church on Sunday, but they do that every day of the week, and they carry that into their work, into their education, into what they do. So when you have religious freedom, then people of faith feel free to innovate, to create, to engage in a society that they feel appreciates who they are. And where you don't have religious freedom, then people hide their faith, or they don't have that freedom to bring their whole self to work, you could say. So the connection, that's one connection. The other big connection is where you have religious freedom, you have much more peaceful societies, and that's really good for all kinds of business, perhaps except for bullet and bomb makers.
So peace and prosperity, they certainly have a connection. And certainly we would say peace and human flourishing have a connection, and human flourishing would certainly be a conversation that would be related to not only economics, but also the kinds of freedom that we're talking about. So tell us a little bit about this event that's taking place in Washington this week. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing there. And then specifically, Brian, if you will, tell the listeners how they can be praying, not only for you, but for the 80 nations that are going to be represented at this event.
Well, I think the 80 nations, that's a big headline. This administration has faced different criticisms for its stance on issues related to religion. But the fact that you have people coming from a variety of nations, including Muslim-majority nations. For instance, one delegation is coming from the United Arab Emirates, and one of the key people coming is Sheikh Abdullah bin Baya, who several years ago promulgated something called the Marrakesh Declaration on the rights of minorities within Muslim-majority countries, arguing that they should have full rights the same as Muslims. So even within areas of the world that face challenges related to religious freedom, there are very strong voices advancing ideas that are conducive to religious freedom. So this event is bringing together policymakers, advocates, religious leaders like Sheikh Abdullah bin Baya into a setting where they can share their experiences and then map a road forward. So with Ambassador Sam Brownback, who really is the highest, you could say the most, the highest profile person to hold the Ambassador for International Religious Freedom office, there's a lot more possibility for this to take track. So I think the fact that it's involving so many different nations and representatives of countries, that's big news. So in the week itself, we'll be having today it's people sharing stories and experiences setting the backdrop of where religious freedom is under duress around the world. And then tomorrow will be people from civil society and business sharing what's going on and in those realms with top leaders of the world. And then the third day, which will be hosted by Secretary of State Pompeo and have comments, a keynote speech by Vice President Pence, will be addressing ministers from around the world, foreign ministers and delegates from around the world. So my role in this is I'll be talking about what we started on, how religious freedom helps to promote open and free societies where economies can be competitive and people can participate in them, not only for economic success, but for, as you mentioned, human flourishing.
So, friends, again, let me remind you that we're talking with Brian Grimm. He's the president of the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation. You can follow him on Twitter at Brian J. Grimm. Am I right? Did I get that one right?
That's right. Middle initial thing.
Yeah, you can't leave out the middle initial. So it's Brian J. Grimm on Twitter. You can also follow what's happening at this event on Twitter at a hashtag, and that's IRF Ministerial. So that's International Religious Freedom, IRF Ministerial. So, Brian, first of all, I think it's extraordinary, and I hope people recognize just how extraordinary it is that leaders from 80 countries are coming to talk about religious freedom and religious liberty. And they are doing so in terms of an American context where I think sometimes we forget just how privileged we are to believe or not believe whatever we want. And I think that people assume that that is true around the world. So can you maybe open the window or crack the door for us? A particular story from a particular place where people don't have access to the economy or they can't be the kinds of contributors that they might be because of religious persecution.
Yeah. So in many countries, being a religious minority puts you in a sort of an isolated position. So rather than like in the United States, our religious minorities in the United States in some ways reap the benefits of religious freedom and have a competitive advantage because in a free and open marketplace, if you're a minority, you could say you always try harder. You know, you're in a position where you're trying to, get up the next rung of the ladder. And we've seen that from everything from Mormons with the tremendous business success Mormons have had, such as starting the Marriott hotel chain. You know, the Marriotts themselves are Mormons, too. Even Muslims in the United States, we have In New York City, if you walk around New York, there's so many food stalls put out by the halal guys. So it's a Muslim food carts. So in the United States, if you're a minority, that doesn't preclude you from participating freely in the economy. Now, one interesting case that's often talked about is China. So in China, there's a tremendous government restrictions on religious freedom. People who are not, for instance, even people who are not Communist Party members can't get promoted up to the ranks of any government-owned industry or business. And if you're a party member, you're not supposed to have any faith. But at the same time, that doesn't really serve their economy so well because in China, it's one of the most religiously diverse countries. About half of the population has some belief or practice. They have the largest Buddhist population in the world, the largest ninth largest Christian population in the world. They have the largest Taoist population, the 17th largest Muslim population. So in countries where religious freedom is restricted, all of these segments of society don't feel as free or don't have as many opportunities to contribute to the economy as they would otherwise. So that's, I think, one of the messages of this conference is that that giving religious freedom doesn't endanger the security of a country. Rather, it allows everybody in the country to feel free and open to participate and ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And religious freedom gets people excited about their country and working in ways that increase the common good.
Okay, friends, so you are listening to Brian Grimm. You can follow him on Twitter at Brian J. Grimm. We are talking about this event that's taking place in Washington, D.C. this week. We want people to be praying for those who are involved. Certainly going to ask our listeners to pray specifically for Brian and others who are going to be speaking. This is a ministerial to advance religious freedom. This is unprecedented to have people representing countries from around the world, some of those countries majority Muslim, as Brian has already mentioned, but from many places in the world where people are not free in the same way that we are free here in the United States of America. So the very fact that we are hosting this event, that this event is even happening, highlights the importance and sort of the rising awareness around the world that with religious liberty comes a lot of other wonderful advantages. And part of that, Brian, it seems to me, is that with pluralism in places where, you know, people are free to believe whatever they believe or not believe whatever they choose not to believe, other freedoms seem to follow. So, hey, we want to thank you for being with us today on Connecting Faith. We certainly want to thank you for what you're doing in D.C., and for what you are doing at the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation. Folks, you can follow it, you can find it online at religiousfreedomandbusiness.org. Brian, thank you for being with us today on Connecting Faith.
Great to be with you, Carmen, and thanks for your interest in this topic.
Absolutely. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to be following up on yesterday's story about Dabo Swinney and Clemson University. You are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Thank you for the person who pointed out that maybe follow-upping is not actually the right way to say something. So see how much fun it is to be able to freely interact via text message during the show. So again, the text message line is open here at Connecting Faith. You can text me at 877-933-2484. There's a lot going on. Thank you to those of you who gave me feedback, both positive and constructive, yesterday in relationship to the Dabo Swinney story out of Clemson University. I love our listeners. I love how diverse and smart and faithful and see, this won't sound right either, but how paying attention you are. So thank you for those of you who followed up yesterday. After I referred to Clemson University and head coach Dabo Swinney and his testimony at a press conference related to the opening season for football, in college football. Dabo Swinney, for those of you who don't know, is the head football coach of Clemson University, which won the national championship in football, I guess, year before this one. So more than one of you raised concern about news coverage that you were also seeing about another event related to Coach Swinney that took place this last week. So I'm talking about a Clemson football ladies clinic. I think it was called the Ladies Clinic, which, again, even just the name of it might be offensive to some people. During this Ladies Clinic, more than $350,000, so a lot of cash, was raised for breast cancer awareness, prevention, and treatment. But during the event, which you had to, you know, pay to participate in, young Clemson football players at one point paraded through the bleachers in nothing but their shorts, or the pants that you generally wear under your shorts, apparently in well-oiled bodies, moving quite provocatively. One player performed what could only be described, and if you have seen the videos online, as a very provocative striptease. So one of you was brave enough to call and share that you were there. So I asked her then to send me a follow-up email related to our phone conversation, in which this listener writes, "So I attended this past weekend's 10th annual Dabo Swinney Ladies Clinic at Clemson. I'm offering these comments and perspective first as a Christian and second as a proud graduate of Clemson University. The event did raise more than $350,000 for some very grassroots breast cancer research and mammogram mobiles." She's talking there about a mobile unit for diagnostic mammograms. She then says, "My mom is a 16-year breast cancer survivor, along with many friends, so it's close to my heart. The opportunity this weekend gave me a chance to reconnect with old sorority sisters and to be back on campus, and I was thrilled to hear Dabo's recent comments about his faith and how it's shared so much in all kinds of social media platforms, and to hear you talk about it here yesterday on Connecting Faith. He has a very important voice and opportunity to use his platform, and he seems to know that. Faith was also featured at the ladies' clinic. There was a blessing over the lunch with these 3,000 women. There was a speaker from ESPN named Holly Rowe, who's in the middle of fighting breast cancer, and she told her story of her hustle in the job community and her tenacity for fighting breast cancer. However," says listener, who is preferring to remain anonymous, and I can certainly understand why. "When the young football players, who are the ages of my own kids, came out for a segment under the title, quote, strength and conditioning, it just went on too long and was out of control. The hard part for me was knowing how so much time and discipline this team spends training and developing, and this event, and how good it was to this point. I believe this portion does not portray the image nor ideas or ideals that Clemson wants to be portraying. I thought, what would I do if that were my son out there with these middle-aged women hooting and hollering for him like he were a Chippendale dancer? Satan loves chaos and confusion, and for a program that is so living in integrity, as Clemson seems to be, this was a major distraction. A distraction from the integrity of their football program, the successful outcomes of their graduates, the money raised for breast cancer, and for such an outwardly public Christian as the coach, I simply will hate to see the witness of yesterday diminished by the distraction of today. So with the same weight that Dabo's faith story went viral, so this too has now gone viral, but to the detriment of the program, the players, and Jesus. The enemy is certainly prowling around, waiting for cracks, and I believe this is a big crack. I do hope that Coach Dabo will get out in front of us as soon as possible with humility, asking for forgiveness and owning it," which, by the way, Clemson has issued a statement related to this, and it certainly falls short of what this listener might hope to be getting. "He sets such a great tone from the top down. You can see it in all levels of the program, but he's a man and he is human. Honestly, I don't think I will return to the event next year. The highlight for me was getting to see behind the scenes the athletic facility and talking with the coaches and reuniting with my old friends. Realizing that could all be done without having to sit and witness young men who are the age of my son prancing around and the response of middle-aged women ogling and fondling them." So thank you to the listener who was present at the event and has raised these very relevant concerns. This is the kind of conversation, friends, that you and I have to be prepared to engage in. So if you had been sitting there during the event, you know, ask yourself, what might you have done? What should you have done? What would you have done? How would you respond if now in watching these videos, you see your neighbor, your friend, the lady from the garden club, your sorority sister, behaving very badly in relationship to a young man who is the age of your child? Another question, and I know that some on social media have raised this. Let's imagine for a moment that a major university in our country had an event targeting wealthy men seeking, you know, to raise, you know, nearly $500,000 for some cause. And that instead of the football team, this had been the women's volleyball team. And they had been parading around in their underwear in oiled up bodies to the ogling of men. So why is the objectification of young men by older women somehow okay? Because we all know that certainly for those of us who are Christians, the objectification of young women by old men is not okay. So if I sound a little exercised about this, it's because I am. First of all, I'm concerned about the double standard. Second of all, I'm concerned about hypocrisy. I'm also concerned about the compromise of a witness that we just raised up yesterday. And so how we as Christians need to be vigilant, not just about what we're going to say in front of a camera or on a press conference, but how we are going to craft everything that we do and everyone involved in everything that we do in such a way that what is presented is the goodness, beauty, and truth of the gospel, always and in all ways, and nothing short of it. So that's really my concern. And I think that that's something that each one of us can get into a relevant conversation about today. There's a guy named Sasha Cohen something. I can't remember his. I think it's a three-name guy. And he now has this program on Sunday nights on Showtime. I'm not recommending it at all. I'm raising it up because it's a cultural conversation going on in the country today. And he targets people who, you know, they frankly should know better than to say and do morally aberrant things on camera. And yet he provokes them to do just that. And then, of course, they've been tricked. And now it's a video and it's viral and they're losing their jobs. They're certainly they've certainly lost their reputations, many of them. And so, you know, you have to ask yourself, if provoked anyone, what nonsense would I be willing to say or do? And would I have the mind of Christ in every moment, in every circumstance, no matter what? No matter the applause I might be able to get by saying or doing something that I actually know is morally aberrant. If it's aberrant to park in a parking lot of a XXX theater and go in and ogle people, it's just as aberrant to pay $150 to do that same thing with college boys, even in support of something as good as breast cancer research. So I think that you and I have to remember that, first of all, sex is a good gift, which means that, you know, our bodies are not something of which we should be ashamed. But sex is a good gift that God created and gave for a particular context. And that context is marriage. And so the real conversation that you and I probably need to be having is a conversation about redeeming marriage, redeeming not only the covenant of marriage, but redeeming the sanctity of marriage, and certainly redeeming the marriage bed. And when we talk about that, we're talking about everything from what we wear and how provocatively we behave to how we dance and absolutely how we treat one another in public. So I commit to not flirting with your husband or anybody else who's not my husband. And you should do likewise. We ought not be making fun nor making ourselves fools over things that are sexualized in our culture. So we're not just talking here about the use and participation in pornography. We're talking about the pornification of a culture. And we're talking about the destruction that is not only to our most sacred relationships in our own families, but the destruction of our cultural fabric. For what? for a moment of silliness in a stadium where a middle-aged woman is going to behave in a way that she absolutely never should in relationship to a barely more than teenage boy. All right. Probably preached long enough on that subject. Let me just conclude by saying this. Our public witness, and certainly the very profound and positive public witness of Coach Dabo Swinney, is not compromised by what happened at this ladies' clinic, this Clemson University ladies' clinic related to the football program. But it now will require that he come forward and talk about the reality for reform and a conversation not only with his players, but his event planners and everybody else about what is and isn't appropriate in terms of the cultivation. I mean, you know, Clemson's not a Christian university. I recognize that. But the cultivation of the kind of environment where we want our students to be educated, where we want their morality to be cultivated, and where we want them to be appropriately celebrated. It's fine for us to applaud them for their football prowess, and it's fine for us to recognize that requires a lot of strength and conditioning. But that doesn't mean we need to see all the flesh involved, and certainly not behave in the way that those participating in the event chose to behave. Okay. That's enough of that. I promise to get off that soapbox. Hey, next up, I have one of my favorite people to talk to of all time. His name's Oz Guinness. If you've never heard him, you're in for a special treat. If you've never read him, you need to. So Oz Guinness is an observer of American Christianity and American culture. He's got all kinds of books in print, and we're going to talk today about his real concern, which is the degradation of freedom in America and the threat to it. So you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBurge. Next up, Oz Guinness. You got to fight. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I am delighted to be joined by Oz Guinness. For those of you who don't recognize his name and think I am talking to a beer tycoon, he actually is the great-great-grandson of Arthur Guinness, the Dublin brewer. And he is, however, also the son of medical missionaries to China. He was a witness to the climax of the Chinese Revolution in 1949, expelled with many other foreigners in 1951, returned to Europe, and has really since then been what I would describe as a social critic, a wonderful observer of what's happening here in the great experiment that we like to call the United States of America. And I'm going to talk with him today about a book that we have available for you, which is Impossible People. But I'm really going to spend my time talking with him about his book that is about to come out, and that is Last Call for Liberty, How America's Genius for Freedom Has Become Its Greatest Threat. Oz Guinness, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, thank you, Carmen. A real privilege to be on with you.
So I have so many things that I would love to just sit down and discuss with you. So we might have to get back together at another time, because I even think that your family's story about vocation and about putting people to work is an encouragement to folks. But today, we want to give away copies of Impossible People. So let me remind our listeners, you can either call or text us at 877-933-2484. But I want to talk about the book that's about to come out, and that's Last Call for Liberty. You contend in this book that the hour we are living in is critical, that the American Republic is suffering its gravest crisis since the Civil War. How so?
Well, I start by saying everyone realizes America is deeply divided, but what actually is the cause of the division? And people say things like the coastals and the heartlanders, or the globalists and the nationalists and populists, various things. But I would argue the deepest division in America is actually between ideas that go back to the American Revolution, which is decisively biblical,
and ideas which go back to the French Revolution and the Enlightenment and people such as Nietzsche and so on. And so you have very different conceptions of freedom underlying the present crisis. So the deepest crisis is about freedom and what constitutes America. So the president saying we want to make America great again, what he doesn't do is say what made America great in the first place. Well, the big difference from the 1850s and 60s, just before the Civil War, was that Lincoln addressed the crises by appealing to what he called the better angels of the American experiment. But nobody is doing that today. And nobody's speaking on behalf of what America was founded to be as a republic. So that's what my book is about. And what it is every chapter is a question. It's a 10 questions on a checklist that Americans have to answer as to which way they want to see freedom and how it's to go. So it's by far the most important book I've written for years. And I just hope in the craziness of the present climate it will be picked up because, you know, talking seriously these days is rather like whistling in the wind.
Indeed. So we're going to continue a serious conversation about this. And if you, because I don't yet have a copy, if you can maybe tell us what a couple of those 10 questions are, because I think that, you know, let's whet people's appetite today for serious conversation.
Well, one of the first one is, do you know where your freedom came from? You know, if you ask most Americans, they would say it came from Athens and democracy. No, it didn't. Most Americans don't realize that actually the notion of constitution, the U.S. Constitution, comes from the Jewish notion of covenant. And through the rediscovery of the covenant during the Reformation, and it came down through the Puritans who came over here, the notion of covenant underlies the American Constitution. So put it this way, democracy has zero social content. All it says is who's supposed to be the rulers, the people. Republicanism, as it coming out of the covenant, has immense significance in terms of how you understand freedom. And Americans need to begin there. Where on earth did your freedom come from? The second question is, what do you mean by freedom? Because there are many views of freedom today. Everyone's using the same word. People mean different things, and some of them are unsupported. Some of them are disastrous. So you take the basic difference between is freedom purely negative, freedom from, or is freedom also positive, freedom for? Well, the framers' view, the old view, freedom was negative. You had to be free from whatever oppressed you, colonial government, King George III. But real freedom is freedom for. That, of course, is closest to Jesus. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Well, we're in a post-truth world where no one cares about truth. And anyway, I go raise a whole lot of questions like that. Americans are going to decide, but at the moment, put it this way, Carmen, 50 years ago, Rudi Deutschke called for what he described as a long march through the institutions. In other words, the left would win dominance in American culture if it slowly infiltrated the press, the media, the university world, and the world of entertainment. Well, 50 years later, they've done it. And so the ideas center in America actually have ideas that are closer to the French Revolution and the Enlightenment and people like Nietzsche, and they're absolutely antithetical to ideas coming from the American Revolution, which was decisively biblical. So America's at a Rubicon moment. You can go one way or the other. That's what the heart of the book is about.
So, friends, we're talking with Oz Guinness, and we're talking about his forthcoming book, Last Call for Liberty, How Americans' Genius for Freedom Has Become Its Greatest Threat. I actually have copies of Impossible Freedom, Christian Courage and the Struggle for the Soul of Civilization.
People.
Oh, Impossible, what did I say, Freedom? Impossible People. I'm looking right at it. You'd think I would be able to read it better than I just did. Apologies, sir. I have copies of Impossible People, Christian Courage and the Struggle for the Soul of Civilization. So if you'd like a warm-up book, until the release of Last Call for Liberty, you can call or text me at 877-933-2484, and we will enter you into a drawing for Oz Guinness's Impossible People book. Oz, one of my favorites, and I think I know this goes back a number of years, but I remember reading The Great Experiment and thinking to myself, if more young people in America, and now I would say, you know, more Americans in general, understood the relationship of faith and freedom, we'd be having different kinds of conversations than we are having, and we would be having those conversations differently.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, that discusses what I call the golden triangle of freedom. In other words, the question, how does freedom last? Because there have been many free societies, they've never, ever lasted for very long. I mean, Athenian democracy lasted a little more than 50 years. Why? The challenge is to sustain freedom, and the founders had this incredible idea. My name is the Golden Triangle. They didn't give it a name. But the idea that you sustain freedom, freedom requires virtue, virtue requires faith, faith requires freedom, and like the recycling triangle, it goes round and round and round. But modern Americans have just abandoned that. Well, if you abandon it, you've got to put something better in its place, or, once again, freedom will not last. So I've got a chapter on that in this current book, too.
Oh, great.
Another chapter I explore, which is something a lot of Americans don't think about, the greatest enemy of freedom is freedom. And that's really challenging because you can see, if you look at history, the freedom requires responsibility, self-reliance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that's actually very tough to do. And it takes training and it takes transmission from generation to generation. And if you don't have that, eventually, without responsibility and self-reliance, there will be people become dependent. And eventually you get people seeing that there's a freedom in tyranny and a tyranny in freedom. And so they opt the other way. Freedom never lasts. And so people take freedom for granted, but it's much more challenging than they realize. And that's what the current book's about.
I think the whole idea, Oz, that freedom takes work, that freedom actually requires a particular way of thinking about myself and a particular investment of time and energy and a transmission of ideas generation to generation and the cultivation of virtue. I actually think that's probably a surprise to a lot of people. And it gets back to your question of how we define freedom. I'm wondering if autonomy comes into the conversation.
Well, modern American individualists are just totally autonomous, unbounded, unchecked, all on themselves. But freedom, of course, is not. I mean, our law says you'll know the truth, and the truth sets you free. Freedom assumes and requires truth. You have to have character. You have to have a way of living. The highest form of freedom, the famous saying, is obedience to the unenforceable. In other words, the only restraint appropriate to freedom is self-restraint. And as soon as you have external restraints, laws, regulations, or whatever, people are less and less free. So you can see today, anything goes wrong in Wall Street or wherever it is, bring in more regulations. Well, we all end up solving the problem of the corruption or whatever it is, but we end up less free. And so freedom is much more challenging than people can think. Rabbi Sacks says it's rather like playing the piano or something like that. It takes practice and it takes time and it takes discipline. And yet free people just want to be free to enjoy themselves and that's it. In other words, people think that freedom is permission to do what you like.
I just love it. Oz, we're going
to
have
what you ought.
You and I are going to have to leave it right there today, and I'm so sorry. Friends, this is Oz Guinness. You need to be following him and reading him and paying attention to him. It's such a privilege and pleasure to have you on with us on Connecting Faith. Friends, if you want to enter the drawing for Impossible People, you can call or text me at 877-933-2484, and we're all going to be looking for Last Call for Liberty. Oz Guinness, thank you so much. Have a great day, and God bless.
My privilege, Carmen. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.